Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Lee Wanika. And this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we are all devoted role players and storytellers at heart, and we absolutely love sharing our passion with you. On our show, we feature diverse tabletop RPG systems, demonstrating them through actual plays and breaking down the rules to provide you with tips, tools, and techniques to help you navigate them. We also love bringing the content creators behind these games into the studio to give you a peek behind the curtain with relevant and insightful interviews.
Let us help you get the most out of your story, no matter what game world or system you're playing. Because detailed settings, heroic characters, diverse NPCs, and a focus on story over rules can make any campaign legendary. Now, here's a message from friends of the show.
Hey, everybody, we're the hosts of 2 Weeks, One Shot, a tabletop RPG variety podcast.
We play one-shot campaigns in a variety of systems.
With a variety of guests from all around the TTRPG scene.
And obviously, I bring a certain je ne sais quoi to every performance.
I never trusted jellyfish as one of my space racism.
Let's talk about how every time I run a game, you guys manage to find like the weirdest take you can possibly give on it.
Have you accepted one of my bugs into your body so that we can communicate telepathically?
No, get your bug. No bugs in my body.
First sign of trouble. Shoot it! Shoot it with the gun!
Find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search 2 Weeks, One Shot.
Are we ever going to have a serious discussion about playing furry pirates?
No. I
said it's red.
I'm talking about it.
So I'll take that as a yes.
Welcome everybody to tonight's episode. Very happy to have you here with us. I'm joined tonight, as always, by my two favorite podcast co-hosts on this show, Mr. Glenn Myers, Mr. Lee Wanika Miller. Gentlemen, how the hell are you? Nice to see you. Now, I muted Lee Wanika, so Glenn, we'll go to you first. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing fantastic. The weather cooperated today. My bad for missing our last recording session, but oh my God, that was a crazy storm. It was like sitting in the middle of a fishbowl of lightning, or that globe that you could put your fingers on and it makes the lightning shoot off to the sides.
Like what are those called? Not Fermi globes, but the, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but I can't think of the technical name for them either. But it was like sitting in the middle of one of those. It was really cool. I loved it. My wife was terrified. But we're still in Virginia Beach. Today was a beautiful sunshiny day of door dashing and shenanigans. And now here I am with my two illustrious co-hosts sitting down ready to rap about some TTRPG stuff.
I know, stuff in general, as we are wont to do on normally Tuesday nights and the occasional Thursday. So, Mr. Lee Wanika Miller, how the hell are you doing this evening? How are things in sunshiny, beautiful?
It was cold and dreary most of the day. In all honesty, I'm doing really well. I am prepping and nearly all set for Rising Phoenix Convention tomorrow. I am running Army Men by High Level Games. 7 o'clock. My table is all filled. Thank you to those who signed up for that table. I'm really excited to be able to run that game at a convention. It is, unfortunately, because I found out about the con a little bit late, the only event I get to run for the weekend, but it does allow me the opportunity to go to a bunch of the panels throughout the day Saturday and really up the ante on my connection with the community. I'm going to some really nice panels. One of them is having to do with how to run games for younger folks. Another is techniques and methods to successfully be inclusive in your games. That's not the actual title, but that's the core of that particular panel. And then there's another panel that has more to do with the content creation business side of things. So again, it's all about upping the ante. Anybody who knows me knows that I am pretty consistently in the method of, I wouldn't say reinventing, but certainly improving my abilities, my skills, my knowledge level in the things that I like to do and the things that I want to do and be good at. And so I'm using this opportunity to connect with the community, run some games Friday night, and really learn. I also get the pleasure of going to the convention with my 17-year-old, and that's always fun. We have fun at these things, so looking forward to it. I'm actually going to be staying overnight this time, unlike the last one, driving an hour up and an hour back. Got old after 4 days at my last con, so I'm actually going to be staying for the night. That way I can really do some of the real early events and some of the real late events, so looking forward to it.
Nice. That sounds like an awful lot of fun. You'll have to go ahead and tell us all about Rising Phoenix Con when you come home. That sounds,
absolutely.
Sounds like a good time. Yeah. Let's get cracking into tonight's episode, because I suspect that there's going to be a lot of beef on the hoof, so to speak, in this particular episode, because tonight we are going to be talking about six role-playing games that you should be running with new players. And we're going to define new players a little narrowly, but basically players who have never played a role-playing game before or have only played a couple sessions and maybe only played a couple sessions of one particular game. If you are looking to go ahead and branch them out into a new game, or if basically that's what your table looks like, what are games that you can bring to the table to help get those new players into the general aesthetic of role-playing games and stuff like that. That's the aim for tonight, is storytellers out there that have a potential table with new people. What the heck are you going to do, right? So that's how we're going to define tonight's festivities. So I think you have a question there, Mr.
I was also going to ask the question, because we as a group had not discussed this element of it. I also wanted to clarify, with this question, are we making suggestions based on the GM being new to role-playing or new to the system? Or are we saying the GM knows all of these systems, he's fluent, it's about a new group of people? And so a fluent, not necessarily expert, but a fluent, I wouldn't even say experienced, but I would say at least comfortable, a GM comfortable with the system.
Yep.
Running this system with new people.
That's, I feel, kind
that's
of my,
how I looked at my choices. I just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page, because I do think some of our choices are very different if the GM is also brand new.
Right. And that's definitely going to be the case. That could be a whole nother episode, like easiest games to learn and digest for a GM. But I definitely think from this one, we're totally focusing on the player aspect. Even if the GM or the storyteller doesn't know the game 100%, they're at least an experienced enough storyteller to be confident picking up a new game and learning to
Competently run a game, even if they're not totally familiar with these particular rules.
And that's the way I looked at the question as well. Even if they're not already versed in the system, they're at least a competent storyteller, understands role-playing games and its concept, capable of learning the new system if it's brand new, etc.
So the baseline is competent GM, brand new players, or inexperienced players, new to them.
And players inexperienced to role-playing games in general, not to the system that we're talking about. So, for example, if players had never played Against the Dark Master before, that's fine. But really what we're aiming for is people who have never played before, and whether or not Against the Dark Master would be a good game for them. That kind of thing.
I saw D&D on Stranger Things, and now I want to try a role-playing game for the first time. What do I got?
Or I've listened to Critical Role, and I want to do that. That kind of thing. That's probably a whole other episode right there. I just listened to Critical Role, and I want to do that, because there's a lot of nuance in what they do. All right, gentlemen. Liwinika, how much do I need to riff for you to go across the room and get your fan roll dice so that we can roll initiative?
So he's still looking for them.
He's still looking for them, you know. See, did I drop a D20 under my desk?
I've already rolled, and nat 20, baby!
Oh, man, that means Glenn's going first.
All right, here we go.
All right, I've got a 10, so let's see what you got.
I am not going first or second.
Okay, as long as you didn't roll a natural one.
I did not roll a natural one.
All right. Mr. Myers, then that means the microphone is yours for round one this evening, sir. So have at it.
Perfect. So for my first game that I think you should bring new players to, I'm going to cheat a little bit. And one of us always cheats a little bit. It just happens. So it's just one of the things you're going to have to learn to know, love, and expect from Tabletop Journeys.
What you got to love about our show, exactly. All of us are a little bit of a cheater.
But using it as my first one plays really well off of the conversation we were just having, trying to more firmly understand the parameters of the question. And we were discussing storyteller who's competent, but not necessarily the most familiar with the system. The other players are new. So from the perspective of a storyteller, choosing the game that they want to introduce new players to My first suggestion is the game that you know best, because it's the one that you've already got the rules down for. It's the one you're already used to running and you know how to create the scenarios. It's the one you've already created so many characters in that you can guide them through that process with their eyes closed. It's the one that you're already familiar with the curves and you're already familiar with the stumbling blocks, so you can let them know and warn them about them before they arrive. And basically, it gives you the ability, even if it's a more complicated system, although if it's a truly crazy complicated system, you may want to skip this advice and go on to the next one. But it's going to give you the ability to sit down and guide your players through the character creation process from a perspective of confidence and knowledge, and help them get to the point where they're feeling confident and knowledgeable about their character themselves. It's also going to give you the experience to be able to decide what you need to explain in detail now up front versus the things that you can cover in play. As an example, in trying to learn to break down Darrington Press's Daggerheart as I'm working on the playtest for it, I'm really comfortable with the core rolling mechanic in the duality dice. Aside from making sure people have just two different colored D20s at the beginning, I can explain that one on the fly. No problem. But helping them understand their domains and how the subclasses work, that's something that we're going to want to talk about and break down in our character creation process to make sure that they understand their character sheet, and they give you great tools to help with that, and all of the abilities that are written on it, or at least where to go to find them. So again, it's a cheater answer because it's not a specific game system. But since we are talking about established storytellers who already know how to run a game, who already likely have a favorite system or a go-to system, choosing one that you know really well gives you a serious leg up when it comes to bringing those new players in, making them comfortable, and helping them understand the new world that they've just stepped into.
There is an inner wisdom in that recommendation, Glenn. There really is. You are a filthy, rotten cheater, but credit where credit is due, there's a certain elegance to that answer. And I think if we look back at the last few years here at the podcast, when we have invited content creators onto the show and said, come and run your game with us, right? We are experienced role players. We have had dice in our hands a lot. And the games I think that we have had the most fun at are the ones where those creators came on and were able to really lay out the details of their game without any sort of stumbling, without any sort of hesitation, without anything like that. Nope, here's the system. Here's exactly how to adjudicate every question you guys have. I think back to like Babies and Broadswords. I think back to Against the Dark Master.
Which has a lot of crunchy tables and stuff.
That's got a lot of crunch to it. But they knew that system cold and it was really helpful.
It plays smooth.
Yeah, like you're a filthy, rotten cheater, but I think that there's some wisdom in that answer, and I will give you kudos.
And I appreciate your takeaway for how I got there, because that is how I got there. I was thinking about all the games that we've played in the last couple of years, and I'm like, dude, the ones I picked up the fastest were the ones where the game designers, the people that know it better than anyone else, taught it to me.
Yeah,
I will go one step further than Josh did. I'm going to heap onto you praise that comes to me from one of the great inspirations of my life, my high school soccer coach. And I think when I say this out loud, some people are going to take this lesson the wrong way.
Yeah.
But what he used to say to us on the soccer field, some colorful language accepted, Coach Nasser would tell us, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And Glenn, that's the praise I'm going to give you. You have mastered that art in this case. And the next stage up from that is the fact that not only did you do that, you snaked an answer that I was formulating as well.
So great minds do think alike. I'm right there with you.
Absolutely. We could go on ad nauseum with every single game that we've had a content creator run for us and say how much better it was because they were running it and now we know how to do it. I can say with very few exceptions, any and all of the games that were run for us by the actual creators, I could run very successfully now, in addition to playing very successfully, simply because I got the lesson in the first session I played.
You got the masterclass right up front.
Yeah, without any more to say on that, that is a fantastic answer to the question.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah. All right. So I think with a 10, if I remember correctly from the rolling at the beginning, I'm going to go second here, Mr. Miller, unless you've got some shenanigans up your sleeve. All right, cool. I'm also going to play a little bit into the gray area around the rules here. But No, that's okay. I'm good. Although that might be a foreshadow to where Mr. Miller is going to go here with round one. So I could snake his answer, but I'm actually not going to in this case. I'm also going to play in the gray area a little bit here. And I'm going to talk more about why I picked a system and then talk about some other systems that kind of fit the same model. And where I went with my first answer here was in ease of rolling mechanics. And specifically, when I talk about ease of rolling mechanics, what I mean is not different dice for everything that you want to do. Right? One die that rules them all throughout the entirety of the system. So what are the systems that I'm talking about here? I'm talking about like Action 12 Cinema, which as a storyteller free game is one of those things that if you just got people that want to sit around a table, read through the book, set up a game, and then just have a stupid amount of fun for 2 or 3 hours, Action 12 Cinema by my Michael Ross, a great example. Another example in that same model, Call of Cthulhu, a D10 based system where everything is D10 based. It's a little bit crunchier in the rule system, so there may be a little bit of a learning curve in there. But again, the fact that everything is going to be a D10 and everything wants to go ahead and roll in the same direction makes the learning of the mechanics easy. So all you need to do is worry about the gameplay itself, right? I'm going to go ahead and throw out another system in that same model, and that's the Alien RPG. And I think when we ran that with you guys and with Steve Pugh and Mike Daniel from 19 Hits the Dragon, what we learned was that even though there are many D6s in that mechanic, that the mechanic flowed really well because the more you wanted to go ahead and do something, the more D6s you could throw at the problem. And the same way that you could introduce complications to go ahead and make the thing that you wanted to do ultimately worse or better in the long run. But again, at its core was the same mechanic. You have a bunch of D6s. The more D6s that you throw at the problem indicates the amount of effort that you're putting into it. That's pretty much at the end of the day how Aliens works. So that's the first category of things that I want to go ahead and talk about tonight is games that have a consistent and simple mechanic that always works the same way, regardless of what it is you want to do.
I got you, and I can support that. Burn 2D6 from our 20s.
Another great example.
Adventure, yeah. Bullets and Bang Tails. That's an AP that y'all could look up out there. That one was a huge amount of fun, and it's also all about a single die type, a single rolling mechanic. They throw in some extra stuff with the burn mechanic. I'll let y'all get into the game as opposed to trying to explain it here, but it's a way to improve your chances, but at a cost.
Yeah. Very similar to Aliens, actually, with that same kind of, I really want to try at this thing, so I'm going to get to throw more dice, even though that will introduce complications. Yeah.
No, totally. And that was an easy one to pick up, too. We had a blast with that game.
Absolutely, yeah.
I love that answer for many of the same reasons that I love the other answer. It really just covers it well. The answer to the question, what's the easiest thing to introduce somebody to? Something that has simple mechanics. They won't have questions about how to do this, how to do that. And even if they do, which is natural, the answer remains the same. The more times a player engages with that activity, the more iterations you do of that activity, regardless of what's happening in the story, what's happening in the game, if every time you need to do a thing, it is the same activity, you do that 4, 5, 6, 7 times, Bob's your uncle. You're good to go. For us as seasoned game players, we were able to pick up on that, I think, within like maybe 2 opportunities or 3, maybe 4, and I stopped asking questions, what am I rolling here? And that's not me doing 4, you doing 4, and Glenn doing 4. That was 4 total. Right. I only had to hear it 4 times. I'm like, then my question was, so I'm doing this and this. Yes. Excellent. Never had to ask again after that before we were out of the first scene and I had it down. That is a hallmark of a game that's quick and easy for folks to pick up on. Love that answer.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, Mr. Miller. I think that gets us round one up to you. So which way are you going to go with your answer in round one here?
So I am risking being snaked, but in lieu of 2 fantastic out-of-the-box answers in a row, I'm going to follow the trend here. We're going to keep the momentum rolling. See what I did there?
I did see what you did there, yeah.
My answer to this is very similar to Glenn's, and that is pick the IP that the new player loves or knows best. Mm-hmm. If you've got a player who knows Star Wars, play a Star Wars game. They know the lore. Now you have no lore stuff to work in because they know it. If they know Star Trek, play Star Trek because now they know the lore. The lore piece doesn't have to be worked on. If it's, so you've seen Mr. Spock do X, here's how he does X in the game. Now they've got it locked in because the lore is known. Same thing with any IP, whether it be Star Wars, Star Trek, Farscape, Stargate, John Carter from Mars, Buck Rogers. Pick your IP. It doesn't matter. If the new player knows and loves that medium, they're going to be better at it. Let's say they are coming to you. I want to try this role-playing thing. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I really love Supernatural. I want to play Supernatural. I got this great game. It's called Monsters of the Week. And then you as a GM set them up with some pre-gens that are basically like
Glenn that. Called Monsters of the Week. That is dirty pool.
I'm not taking the game. I'm saying the IP. All I'm saying is if you give the players the IP that they know best, they're going to be able to have fun with it. They grew up on G.I. Joe, want to play some G.I. Joe, bust out Renegade, play G.I. Joe, Transformers. Play the game that they know best. Give them that lore that they know so they automatically feel a level of mastery. So the little bits, the gamey bits, the how hit points work, how armor class works, how defense dice work, all that is very small because they know what it all equates to.
I hear what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're laying down, despite the deliberate trotting upon my next answer.
To be fair, I trotted on my own, too.
The first game I ever taught my kids was D&D, and it went pretty well. It took a few sessions to really get it down, but if Avatar The Last Airbender by Magpie Games was out then versus having just come out a year ago, that would have been a fantastic game for me to start them on because all four of them loved the show. Everybody knew the lore. It would be easier for them to come up with the things that they want to do because that's a struggle for new players too that we don't want to ignore is with the vast world of what would you like to do now open to them. Analysis paralysis can kick in. They don't know what they're supposed to do so they can become afraid to do anything. But if you're playing in a world that you know and love, if you're playing an earthbender and Ba Sing Se, and you've watched all of the seasons and you loved Uncle's Tea Shop and Ba Sing Se and all of the storylines that went on around it, you're going to be able to get into that environment and come up with things to do on your own much more easily. The game's just going to flow out of them a whole lot more. And I think that that's a fantastic answer.
And in a similar vein, the first game I brought Quentin to play is not a game we're going to recommend tonight, but it is because it was an IP that Quentin really knew and loved, was Palladium. He loved Robotech. The easiest way to get him to play a game when we were playing the Palladium game that I ran was pick any Robotech character type you want. I had all the new books and all the old books. What do you want to run? He goes, I want to be a Veritech pilot. I said, here's the deal. If you are, we'll get you there eventually, but you're going to start very similar to the Third War. You're going to be on a Cyclone, and you're going to be a dude in a Cyclone with limited access to protoculture, so you're going to have to make those decisions. So I can do that. Why? Because the Third War was his favorite season of the show. He knew that down cold. He had no problem picking up what is arguably one of the more complex games simply because he knew the IP.
And Saber-class Cyclone was my go-to Robotech character to play in Rifts too, so I can back him up on that.
I think that your answer about trotting out an IP that the players know and the players want to play in goes to the point that the system at some point doesn't matter, right? The system is just the rules. If the game is set up properly, if there's a good starter mission, that kind of thing that can teach them the rules, then the rules ultimately don't matter. It's about playing the game and having fun. Think about how much of the LARPing that we did in the 90s was influenced by the show
Kindred of the Embrace,
right?
Yes.
Those were stereotypical characters that you could go to any LARP and see, oh, yep, I know exactly who you are. I know exactly what you've seen. Oh, you got Avenger with a katana. I know exactly who you are. Like all that.
Who killed Eddie Bruja? Yeah.
Totally. Exactly. Right. So, yeah, I think that you are really onto something with that about trotting out something that the players want to play based on the IP that it is. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. You can believe it. We're actually already at the end of round one here. So we're going to step aside for a quick commercial break, and then we will be right back with round number two. Give Liwanika here a couple minutes to go ahead and get his dice.
Ouch. Here at Tabletop Journeys, we've leveled up our game, and we're prepared to make your next roll legendary. We've just started a partnership with FanRoll Dice, and they have over 300 product options to choose from. Gemstone, metal, new liquid core dice, and so much more. Better yet, listeners to the Tabletop Journeys podcast can get 10% off on their orders when they follow the link below and use discount code PODCAST10. A portion of these purchases come back to us, and this is a great way for you to help support the show.
Alrighty then, we are back. Gentlemen, fan roll dice to the ready here. Let's roll up, see who's got the initiative in round two.
And I've got advantage this time because I rolled a nat 20
last
time.
You do rub it in our faces. Why not?
Big money, no whammies. No.
It was on an 18, but it's a 5.
15.
Your 18 would have served you not. 19.
All right.
You are up first, my friend.
All right, that means I get to go last. All right, I like it.
If I haven't laid enough hints throughout the first half of our show tonight, I'm definitely going to go with Star Trek Adventures RPG.
You certainly had the determination to go ahead and lay that.
I did. You know, in fact, my belief in Idic and my belief that there's a greater future out there for all of us, those two values are why I've come to this decision. Star Trek Adventures RPG by Modiphius Entertainment, the 2D20 system, I think is a fantastic game to play with newer players for a host of reasons, and I'll very briefly elucidate those reasons. The number one reason is the IP. The IP itself is so well known in geek circles that there are very few folks who are even willing to consider or play a role-playing game that don't, at least in some way, shape, or form, know about Star Trek. Now, maybe they're on that Star Wars side of things and they are adamant about it, so they don't quote unquote like it. Lie. I don't believe that's the case. They may like something else better, but generally speaking, they at least know the basic tenets. So again, the lore piece is there. As far as mechanics, it is fairly easy to pick up. There are several different starter type adventures, whether you're getting something out of the Klingon book, the adventure in the core rules book, and my favorite is the adventure in the starter box set. That is harder to come by these days, but the other ones work fine. And all of those are available PDF only, so you can get them in other ways as well. But those adventures are very well crafted, starting with the most basic types of challenges, the most basic types of roles, and slowly building them as you go, as well as being fantastic and awesome adventures. The starter box set adventure is so much fun to run. The only thing I can possibly think that might be more fun than running it as a GM is playing it. But I know it really well, so it would be a little bit less for me now. But honestly, if somebody had said, hey, I want to run this Star Trek game, would you be a player, and then ran that adventure, I would be as sold on that game today as I was running that the first time. Same thing with the Mission of Xerxes out of the core rulebook. Those are just really fun adventures and very Star Trek. Honestly, you could take the core tenets, the types of things that are in each of those, and while they are heavily Star Trek influenced, if you found a way to dust off the IP and put other flavor on them, those would be great adventures to run in pretty much any game system. Mission of Xerxes, by the way, if you were to run that as an aliens adventure, Colonial Marines are going to rescue a science expedition. Oh my goodness, that would be perfect.
Oh, totally.
Like you said in the first half hour, Josh, at a certain point, the rules are the rules. The story, the fun you're having at the table is king, right? And I think that's how I view that. But honestly, it's a great game. It's a great system. And there are some more complicated bits, but look, take Tabletop Journeys as your lightning rod for the truth here. We knew that there were some bits that can be a little bit more complicated, and guess what we did? We played with an amazing cast of role players, and we played with some wonderful patrons in general for a year, multiple games in this game system, and learned as we went. And as we learned something and got comfortable with something, then we'd bring it into the game. And that is a hallmark of a great system for new players.
Yeah, if you think about the STA adventure that I ran at Catacon this past year, Dark Frontier, right? So a horror-inspired STA adventure. We used STA as the game engine, but again, it was very heavily inspired by Aliens, really heavily inspired by Cthulhu, everything like that. I used a lot of the Octon Cthulhu rules, another 2D20 system by Modiphius, but basically played it within a Star Trek wireframe. So yeah, this is how flexible the 2D20 system is, that you can port other themes into it, and it all still works. The whole threat and momentum metacurrencies work both ways. You know, it's my go-to horror system. I always thought that Aliens was going to be my go-to horror system because of the stress dice mechanic that it uses. But I really think that even if I'm not playing a traditional kind of Star Trek adventure, I think that the 2D20 system is definitely going to be my go-to on that.
And I can say, as someone who has only ever played Star Trek Adventure, because I have not by any means tried to run it or absorb enough of the rules to run it, although I am picking them up. As a player, it was really easy to learn. Now, mind you, I am an experienced role player, but particularly with the online tool for character creation, that really took a lot of the guesswork out of what to put where on the sheet. That helped significantly. Though if you're sitting down with a storyteller directly in an in-person game, that would be awesome as well, because you'd have that same opportunity to pick their brain and talk about how do I do my values, etc. But the basic rolling mechanic is simple and easy to follow. The end-game currencies, both for the players and for the storyteller, between momentum and threat, with two different currencies that a player can use, still wasn't hard to understand. And the fact that they're diametrically opposite added an interesting juxtaposition, isn't the right word, but the contrast of whether or not I chose to purchase new dice with momentum or threat, mm-hmm. and the fact that it plays into some of the abilities. That was a really intriguing mechanic right off the bat. Yeah. And overall, there were questions that came up, but we're lucky enough to have some very experienced players in a couple of our games who could throw out insight. But in terms of understanding what my job as a player was, significantly helped, bouncing back to your previous answer also, by the fact that I knew the IP and I know what a Starfleet officer in general in an episode of Star Trek is going to do when faced with the situation. They're going to try to solve the problem. All of those things combined to make it a super easy game for me to pick up and become immediately engaged in.
One last point. One of the things that we did this year was bring in a new cast member to Star Trek Preservations, and that's Lacey. And right. Lacey, while a very experienced role player, was not terribly well-versed in Star Trek. And like my previous point, even those who aren't experts in the IP know about the IP. So she wasn't, I've never seen this. So she knows what Star Trek is. She has seen Star Trek episodes. She couldn't quote the title and scenes of several of the episodes as I can, or Josh can, or even you can, Glenn. But even with limited IP knowledge, she's picked up on the game very well, and just over the few episodes that we've done so far this year, it is noticeable how much faster she is at getting into what she wants to do and how it needs to be done. Yeah. With three sessions and a one-hour session zero, she is where some players might be in twice that amount of time without having the IP knowledge, right? So again, I think that's why I feel very comfortable with this as a great game, because we have experimented with players who are new to the game. We have experimented with players that are at variant levels of expertise. I've run it for some newer role players at conventions, and they picked up on it just as easily. It's just one of those things. I think a level of comfort if you're GMing, certainly. But once you've got that, you've got a winner.
All right, Mr. Myers, up to you.
Ooh, my turn?
It is, yes. Your turn.
All right. So for my second pick, I am going to get more specific than my first cheater answer. And it was already alluded to in one of Lewanika's. I'm going to take us to the world of rules light, narrative heavy games that are powered by the apocalypse. Specifically, I'm going to talk about Monster of the Week, because that's the one that I'm the most familiar with. For Monster of the Week and a narrative heavy game system, the rules are so simplified and so streamlined that every time I've run the game, it has been a learn-to-play game. I've run second sessions for a few people, but I've only ever had one experienced Monster of the Week player, and they had played one other time. I have taught the game and run the first session all within 4 hours every single time. So I was able to bring in new players who had never played the game before, teach them how to build their characters, create party connections, review the basic rules, how to play the game, and then launch into the game in about an hour, and then run a session within the next 3 hours to have a 4-hour time block of learn to play. And it's fantastic. It is the only game I have ever taught this quickly and this easily, and I absolutely love it. Now, mind you, there can be a little bit of a slowdown if you're bringing people who have played role-playing games that are more complicated, like D&D or Palladium games, and bring them into a Monster of the Week game. But if we're talking about new players, they don't have any of those strategist habits and focusing on exactly which skill should I be using in this scenario habits that come from very rules-heavy, very skill-heavy games. So it's easier for them to think more freeform, because one of the basics that I tell them is just tell me what you want to do in the scene. Just like you were watching Sam and Dean as the Winchesters and Supernatural, or you're watching Buffy and the Scooby Gang figure out how they were approaching the scene of the crime in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You just tell me what you want to do. I'll help you come up with which role we're going to do, or we'll come up with it together. And then the rolling mechanic is super simple. It's 2d6 plus your stat, which you don't roll. It's just a static bonus. And it's either failure with 6 or less, success with a consequence or a cost from 7 to 9, or full success at 10 plus. And most of the onus for all of the extra stuff that goes on there comes from the storyteller. So by sending out the playbooks in advance, because that is one thing that's key, people have to come in with an idea of what they want to play, or a couple of playbooks, and they're all set up off of hero stereotypes. The chosen one, like Buffy in Monster of the Week, is called the Chosen, right? So that's going to play a character who's destined to be a hero. If you know that's what you're going to play, the playbook has everything you need right there on it, to include a second sheet that describes the abilities, talks about what you can do when you level up. And I can hand out a handout to every player that has all of the basic role moves on it so that we can refer to them together. And it's super easy to just sit down and get into a conversation, because that style of game is more about a conversational style as the narrative builds and discussing together what the action looks like. And then you throw in the dice rolls just to make everybody sit on the edge of their seat. And it's super easy to teach, super easy to get into, and so much fun, it's not even funny. I have yet to have a player end disappointed, and everyone's been like, wow, this was a whole lot of fun. I didn't know what to expect, but I really enjoyed it. I can't speak for every Powered by the Apocalypse game out there, but I've listened to a lot of them through The Crit Show, who does a Monster of the Week actual play where periodically when they bounce to other worlds, they do it in a different Powered by the Apocalypse game. So I've also gotten to listen to Dungeon World and a cyberpunk style game and two different pirate style games. It's been a blast. And for all of them, again, it's just discussing what's going on. We talk about what you want to do in the scenario, and then we figure out what to roll and throw some dice.
Powered by the Apocalypse is such a great choice because, again, we talked about this in the first half hour. Simple mechanics, all about the narrative. Let the players do what the players want to do. And then what do you want to do? And then let's figure out how it happens, as opposed to some games that work the other way around, where it's figure out what I can do mechanically and then decide, given the mechanics, what it is that I actually want to do, how I want to flavor it. I love that choice. And let's call a spade here too, Glenn. If you search the internet for best RPGs to play with brand new players, Monster of the Week is always at the top of the list, always, because for a Powered by the Apocalypse system, the rules are easier to get into. Real Thing was awesome, but it relied a lot on really good roleplay to make the discovery system really sing.
I think to expand on what you're saying there, Josh, is with some Powered by the Apocalypse games, it really helps to have one or two experienced players with one or two newer players.
Yeah.
That way you can show them the ropes.
Think about Masks, right? Masks is Powered by the Apocalypse system, and those rules seem more complicated to me than Monster of the Week.
Absolutely. Whereas Monster of the Week, a table of all brand new people who've never role played, or you can do a game and have a wonderful time. I love it.
Right. Or even part of one of my games for your first Monster of the Week session and got to learn it all right there.
and I had never played that specific game. I have a lot of experience with Power by the Apocalypse at that point. I think that was my fourth Power by the Apocalypse game at that point. So I was really comfortable with how it worked and how playbooks worked. With any Power by the Apocalypse game, honestly, for me, the quality of the playbooks and the variety of the playbooks will make or break that game every time. If I'm looking at generic Power by the Apocalypse game system, if there are five or there are 10, if those five cover the gamut of archetypes that I would want to play in that type of game, I'm good and I will have a blast. If I feel it's missing something, especially if that something is that archetype that I would want to play in that scenario. So if they left one on the table that I would think as a player would be core to that experience, then I could see challenges with that game. So far, I've never come across a Power by the Apocalypse game that was missing what I deem as a critical archetype. So as long as you've got quality playbooks, Power by the Apocalypse is always a winner every time.
All right. I guess that it is up to me then to go ahead and finish round two. And I feel like this is the easiest answer that we're going to have all night. We've had a lot of really great discussion about a lot of really great games and game concepts and stuff like that. I really feel like I'm hitting the low-hanging fruit here because I am going to pick the most ubiquitous role-playing game in the world, the one that everybody knows in its most playable edition. It's got to be Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Now, hear me out, because there's a lot of rules in Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, which can be very intimidating to new players. And so I am going to go ahead and put an asterisk on this answer. And that is that there are certain classes and certain play options which make D&D 5 exceptionally playable to new players. If you want to give them a fighter, if you want to give them even a rogue, if you want to give them a bard, I think when you start getting into the heavy spellcasters and stuff like that, D&D gets a lot more complicated to new players. But on a base level, D&D 5, the rules are complicated, but the rules also make sense. And it can be a lot of fun. I'm going to go against the answer that I gave in round one here, because this is not a game that only uses one style of dice. It uses every style of dice, depending on what it is that you want to do. So it really introduces the math rock fun that we all know and love. And here's the thing. At the end of the day, anybody who is a role player of any strength right now, I'm going to guess 95% of us began on Dungeons and Dragons in some variation or other. That's the one that like our friend found in his uncle's closet and that we played on a Friday night, that kind of thing. That's just like where we all began. And there's a reason why we all began that way is because the rules are not simple, but the rules are transparent. The rules are what the rules are. You can get through them very quickly. And it's such a blank template that you can play any kind of a game that you want using that game engine, right? Dungeons & Dragons is largely built for fantasy-based high magic worlds or even magic present worlds on some level. But at the end of the day, if you're a fan of the Lord of the Rings, it makes sense. If you're a fan of the Belgariad, if you're a fan of the Chronicles of Pretty, if you're a fan of any of these more magic than not worlds, then Dungeons & Dragons is just an easy template to go ahead and play whatever kind of adventure you want to go ahead and play on that. It's so ubiquitous. It's what everybody knows. When most of the world thinks about role-playing games, they think about Dungeons & Dragons, and there's a reason for that. It's partly because Wizards of the Coast is the foremost role-playing game publisher in the world right now, but it's also because the game is as pervasive in popular culture as a role-playing game can be. Like, there's probably evidence to go ahead and say that Dungeons & Dragons is not the best game in the world, but it's the one that everybody thinks of. It's the one that everybody says, if I'm going to be role-playing, everybody thinks Dungeons & Dragons. People that don't know role-playing games, when I started saying, hey, I do a role-playing game themed podcast, they're like, oh, okay. Didn't really know what that meant. As soon as I started saying that I do a Dungeons & Dragons themed podcast, everybody knows exactly what it is that we're talking about on a weekly basis and whether or not they want to join or not. Just the way that it is.
I think Dungeons & Dragons 5e is an inspired answer given the nature of our conversation. It's ubiquity in a very similar way to the IP answer I gave allows those who are geek or geek adjacent to have some form of shared knowledge about what's going on. You can say, are you a Firefly plan? You want to play somebody like Jane? think of a barbarian or yep. think of Conan. You can equate all of these archetypes in some fashion to something they might have seen or something they may have known. Though based on a conversation we had earlier this week, I would never tell somebody think of Gandalf and play a wizard. They don't match. Gandalf is an NPC and he's an alien or an angel. He is not a wizard. Full stop. I will say this, though. If you're going to play D&D with new players, I would strongly recommend going with the free version of the game. Those classes and subclasses that are offered there are a perfect way to start the game. I would even go so far as to say for those GMs who are even a little more expert, if it's not in the SRD, not for new players. Feats accepted, because SRD and feats is a whole gripe for a whole nother podcast. But I strongly feel that bit of limitation cuts out most of the very difficult things. Josh is not wrong. Some spellcasting can be very wonky and weird and difficult. I'm thinking warlocks. Seems wonderful, yeah. Is very thematic, but can be very limiting and can be weird for a newer player to gather.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. Warlock is exactly kind of the class that I was thinking yeah. about. I even think the paladins or clerics, like some yeah. of that nuance could be lost. Absolutely.
But if you stick with those base options that are in that simple free guide, you're dealing with a life cleric. You're dealing with a, I forget what kind of barbarian it is, but you're dealing with a champion fighter. You're dealing with a thief rogue. Yeah. When you start dealing with some of those very base options, you are really giving people a feel for the game. And then you can do any number of first level adventures. Take your pick.
Yep.
Generally
run
speaking,
the starter adventure.
Yeah. Whether it's Phandalin, Icefire Peak, doesn't matter. You pick any 5e adventure that says for first level, if it's a WotC published or if it's from a well-known source, you've got an adventure that can be picked up and learned fairly well without a whole lot of extra. To toot our own horn, even if you're talking about going to get the Dragonlance Companion and our Adventures of the Tower Initiate, I think that as long as you are careful about your character options, provide some pre-gens or what have you, is really probably something that a competent DM can run new players through and they can really get a feel for it. That's a great way to bring people into Dragonlance as a world, even if they've played D&D before, as a matter of fact. But I think the issue there is a little bit of guardrails, and 5e can be a great way to start for new players.
I would agree. In fact, the way that I would do it with a more complicated game like 5e that has a larger rule set is if I had an entire group of new players, design the entire initial start and teaching scenario to yep. limit the rules. You don't have to hit everything in the first go round. If warlocks, wizard, sorcerer, et cetera, all add more complication to the game by bringing in magic, spell slots, and all of those extra pieces, keep it more granular than that. Say, all right, guys, we're going to run a pirate, mercenary, or heist-style adventure. Talk to everybody about what they want to do. Come up with a mix of martial, non-magic classes. Throw them a lot of healing potions and maybe an NPC cleric and just focus on the base mechanics of the attack rolls, the skill checks, and interacting with the world. After you play a few games, then let one of them bring in a spellcaster or something else and expand the rule set from there. You don't have to do it all at once. And that's another way to bring new players in without overwhelming them.
I think if you start at level one, for instance, sorcerers and clerics are fine. Paladins don't have any spells, so you don't have to worry about that. They don't even get their smites until second level. So I think you're fine with most of those. I would definitely say limiting the magic to the sorcerers because they have limited spell options, but they're still a full caster. Gives you enough of the information that'll let them be competent at wizard down the road, but without the complication of memorizing spell book and all of that jazz. So I think sorcerer becomes a really good, everybody wants to do this. Like, I watch Stranger Things. I want to play a wizard, or I watch Critical Roles. I want to play the magic user. I would say toss him a sorcerer. I think that's a really good way to get somebody into the role. Better than any edition before, and I am one of the biggest fans of 3.5, and I was a huge fan of second edition as well. I think the 5e Sorcerer is light years ahead of game design for newer players and starting players of any version of the game to date. I really like that class. I've played it several times. I enjoy it. It's a very easy class to pick up. The mechanics are fairly simple, and the subclasses are very thematic. Everything about that, I think, just begs to be played by new players who are interested in the magic piece of the game. And that way, you're not really cutting off that part of the game, and you're letting them see all the aspects of the game. I think that's a really good one that I think you could probably leave in, where the Warlock and the Wizard, I would also have some concerns.
Yeah. All right. So that's our top six. We are going to step aside for a few minutes here. We have a little bit of Patreon exclusive content to record along with tonight's episodes. But for those of you that are not Patreon subscribers, we'll be back in just a minute. All right, we are back from our Patreon exclusive content. Hope you enjoyed the little musical interlude there. Remember, if you want to hear our Patreon exclusive content, you can go sign up at www.patreon.com/ttjourneys. We'd love to have you join over there. It really helps support the show. It helps us keep doing what we're doing. And if you ever want the chance to go ahead and throw Clackety Math Rocks with us at our table, remember that is one of the big perks of our Patreons there, that they get to go ahead and play with us on a monthly basis. Really hope that you go check that out. Again, that's www.patreon.com/ttjourneys. So let's see what's coming up next week on the show. Preservations is still on its break. It's going to be on its break for another couple of weeks here. That'll be back on May 14th with Preservations episode 4 beginning. But in the meantime, next Friday on the show, we're going to have old friend of the show, Alex Vigna, back on. He was on about a year ago now talking about his Frankenstein-inspired Ravenloft setting, Lamordia. He's going to be back talking about his next project. It's called Big Adventure Game. So we're going to be doing an interview with him, learning about the game, and then he'll be leading us through an actual play for a couple of weeks as we play through here. So really looking forward to that. Really looking forward to having Alex back. Be a good time as always. Can't wait. So. All right, gentlemen, thank you for your time this evening. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Hope that you enjoyed tonight's show. And like I said, we'll be back next week to talk to Alex Vigna.
Yeah, it has been a lot of fun talking about how to bring new players into the game, different ways, different avenues to do so. Hit us up in the comments. If you're seeing us on YouTube, hit the like button, smash the subscribe, get notifications when we're dropping episodes. Let us know the games you use to bring in new players. Tell us about your experiences with new players at various games. Tell us about your first experience playing the game. We want to hear all about it, both the good stories and some of the horror stories. We know they're out there. We can learn from some of the horror stories, and we can share that with our wider audience. So talk to us. Let us know, folks. Love to hear from you.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Appreciate it as always. And we'll be back next week with Alex Vigna. So until then, we will talk to you later.
Good night, all.
Later.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Tabletop Journeys. We would love to hear your feedback on our show today. Join us at www.ttjourneys.com, where you can subscribe to the blog to leave comments and see all the content that we publish beyond the podcast.
You can also stay in touch by subscribing to our Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram at ttjourneys, joining our Facebook group, Tabletop Journeys, or by sending an email directly to podcast@ttjourneys.com. Our full episodes come out every week on Friday, and every Tuesday features actual play and gameplay showcase episodes. Looking for early access? You can support the show and get episodes before everyone else at www.patreon.com/ttjourneys. Check it out today and see all the awesome benefits we bring to our supporters.
Lastly, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podchaser, Spotify, or Audible, you would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our growing community. And we bid you fair tides, friends, for Legends awaits.